Self-harm is the beginning of harming others. And harming others just increases self-harm. The Buddha talked about this from the beginning, and there is a very beautiful story about Angulimala, the murderer. Angulimala means a garland of fingers. Originally, he was a student named Ahimsika, and he was interested in peace. That was the meaning of his name. But he became so indoctrinated by his teacher that he set off on a journey to collect 1,000 fingers, or so the story goes, and that would give him the secret that the teacher could pass on to him. And so to accomplish that, Angulimala became a serial killer. But the Buddha, through his mental powers, knew about this. And he realized Angulimala's potential to stop. Angulimala was actually setting out to kill his mother in a wilderness area, which is the most heinous deed that a human being can commit. And the Buddha went to stop him. He appeared in the forest where Angulimala was and began to walk there. Angulimala spotted the Buddha and started to chase him. He ran as fast as he could, but he could not catch up with the Buddha. Finally, he yelled out, "Stop, recluse, stop." The Buddha was walking at a regular pace. He turned around and said, "I have stopped. Now you stop." Angulimala bowed and asked, "What do you mean, stop?" Then the Buddha explained about stopping the killing of his virtue, stop the killing of the goodness within him. This is what the Buddha exhorts us to do, to stop killing the goodness within us. We are all, in a way, serial killers of goodness. Every time we use speech or we act in ways that are harmful, even our thoughts can be harmful towards ourselves and others. In this way, we have to be so mindful of how we act and speak. I didn't realize this when I was young, until I found the Buddha's teachings. And I was very aware of the pain of what other people can do and what we can do to ourselves. I didn't realize. I saw the pain in the world. But through the grace of Dhamma practice, we can surmount pain we have experienced, pain our loved ones have experienced, by overcoming the darkness within us, developing these exalted states of practice, training the mind, using compassion and awareness to free ourselves from old patterns of holding. These are powerful tools that disable the harm we cause within us, that we continue to cause because we believe that this is how we are and this is how we have to be. So we are reteaching ourselves the ways of harmlessness are the way to healing. Harmlessness means restraint. It also includes goodwill. To be more and more aware and more compassionate. Harmlessness is the sister of compassion. If we are watching the screen of the mind instead of the screen of the computer, then we have a chance to develop peace, even one moment of peace. Neuroscience has shown that this kind of practice leads to a cumulative effect on negative emotions in our minds that harm us and others. So the world that we create is born here in our hearts, and if we take care here within the heart, we take care of ourselves, and we take care of each other. And if we take care of each other, we take care of ourselves, and we rejoice in that. But we can't do that by killing the monster out there. So we have to stop downloading things from the outside and look within and pay more and more attention to caring for this internal space into which we can bring metta, or loving kindness, and cultivating virtue, virtuous conduct, virtuous speech, the pure thoughts, the right intentions, which are the intention to give up that which destroys us. It's an inner disarmament. We ask the world to put down its weapons, but we carry these weapons within us. And we can learn how to put down those weapons. Just like Angulimala bowed to the Buddha and realized that he had to stop. So we have to say that to ourselves. We must learn to stop the harm that we cause, not expecting the world to stop its causing harm, but to begin here. When I was a young woman, before I became a nun, I was working in Senegal and traveling to the southern part of the country, the Casamance. It was early afternoon. I was walking on the coast. There was no one around me. It was midday, and I had to climb up a bluff to continue my walk, when suddenly a young man approached me. He came from behind and attacked me. Of course, I was terrified. But I'd been living next door to a mosque for a long time, and every morning when I meditated, I would hear the chanting from the mosque, Allah Akbar. So when he attacked me, I started chanting. That was the very first thing I had heard that morning. And he stopped, just like Angulimala. He stopped and he got up and said, what's that? Are you a nun? I wasn't a nun then. I said, no. So he said, why are you chanting? I said, I'm chanting for help to the divine. Who else will hear me? And he said, okay, I won't hurt you. I didn't believe him. Then he asked me, what do you have in your bag? I said, I have $200. He said, give me money. I said, no, I won't give you anything except forgiveness. Then he pleaded with me. I just need a little money to give the priest and ask for forgiveness. So I gave him 25 cents and he went away. Forgiveness is really the light that guides us through this terrible maze of the world's trappings and our own weaknesses, our low opinions of ourselves that destroy us. None of us are serial killers like Angulimala, but he was able to bow down to the Buddha and eventually become a monk after killing so many people. Think of that as rehabilitation. But the Buddha gave Angulimala the greatest gift that a human being can receive, and that is the gift of the Dhamma, the gift of harmlessness, the gift of forgiveness. Even if we feel unworthy, or we feel like we can't live up to our expectations, we can carry that message to other people in some subtle form. We become the victim, we become the target for other people's mistreatment or unskillfulness. But if we can be gentle or bring up kindness from the depths, then maybe they will also look and feel and sense, yes, this is worthy. So our disarmament is really an internal one. We can't expect the world to do what we ourselves are not doing. If we protest in anger, we could end up hurting someone. What is the real message for us? Because all the destruction and all the unskillfulness and all the anger and all the bombs that are going off within us, that we can take care of little by little, put an end to. If we are mindful of our speech, and if we don't open our two lips when we're angry, we actually have two mouths, an angry mouth and a gentle mouth. And if we speak out of gentleness, if we act out of non-violence, then we're putting in the causes and conditions for violence to end with one human being on this earth. But that is the piece of earth on which we stand. I notice more and more, just when you think that you've climbed so high on the mountain, you fall down and you have to hold on with your bare fingers, that you realize there's a long way to go. So we can't sit back on our good deeds and think, I'm doing it right. We have to be so meticulous, not too proud of ourselves, not too critical of everyone else, but to look within, bring up the awareness of what is going on in our own heart, and keep going upwards, ascending, climbing, reaching out to help the person next to us, what they're struggling with, as much as we can. Then we learn how to take this practice out into our daily life. And when we have an angry feeling, pay attention to the mind and to the body. If we don't know what we're actually feeling, the body will know it, because there'll be tension. The heart will be racing. The Buddha said to his little son Rahula that when you finish doing something and you see that it was unskillful, then you can know next time not to do it. If you've spoken words that were like bombs now, then next time we'll know not to throw them. And if you notice in the middle of doing something unskillful, then we stop if we can, and we restrain ourselves. And if we notice that we're speaking in an unkind way or gossiping about somebody else just to make an impression, we stop. These may not seem destructive, but they're incredibly harmful. They're just like grenades. And the best thing of all, if we remember, before we speak, before we throw a word or an attitude or a thought, an intention, we should stop and not go there, or examine and retrain, retract, go to the deepest place within us and bring up a sense of goodwill or forgiveness, of loving kindness and self-compassion. and spread that in our consciousness. That is the greatest gift that we can give for each other, for ourselves and each other. Anger is so contagious, but so is loving kindness. So if somebody is speaking to us in loud tones or heavy tones, we can try to enlarge the space within our heart. Just like here in the forest, if we meet a bear, we're supposed to say something in a loud voice or make our body bigger. We can be bigger than the monster that we are holding within us, using our loving kindness, but not using anger. Then the words will fall into a bigger space. The anger will die within that loving feeling. The aversion will die. And if it doesn't die, we can breathe in and out until it does. We can be aware and use our awareness and our mindfulness to meditate and listen with the whole body, with compassion, rather than with our head, until that aversion is just rising and falling on the breath and dissipating, because we're patient enough to listen with compassion. Because we can see that people don't speak or act or even think angry thoughts or speak in angry ways unless they're suffering. And suffering always bears having compassion. If we practice compassion for ourselves every day when we wake up, bringing in loving kindness, forgiveness, a thought of compassion or mercy towards ourselves and others, then in the hour of our need, it'll be easier for us to do that to people that we meet. We don't always meet others in a good mood. There's so much suffering around us. If we work with people who are sick, experiencing tragedy or trauma, they can't help but being angry. So then we use our practice to enable us to help them, help ourselves, help each other. Mindfulness in daily life is an extension of this. We can always use chanting. Chanting is a simple activity. Even if we think that we're doing brilliant things, we might be hurting somebody unknowingly. And so we use the chanting to purify the mind, to praise, to reflect on the good qualities of the Buddha or whoever we worship or admire. Then we are developing generosity, stillness of mind, wisdom, and compassion. We sure know how to wash our bodies every day. This kind of practice is how we wash the mind. We're very good at watching our diet or eating the things that we really like, whether it's the healthiest diet or not. But what are we feeding the mind? What are we eating internally? Let it be good. Let us nurture ourselves on skillful mind states and skillful food for the heart. So if we put in these kinds of ingredients into our daily activities, our awareness will grow in skillfulness. Our thoughts Our speech and our actions will grow in skillfulness, and so will our happiness and well-being, and so will our inner peace and joy grow day by day. And so will the blessings that we live through our life and that we bring to the world. That's the Buddha's recipe for awakening and freeing ourselves from suffering.